we present Best Sellers. Best Sellers, featuring great works by famous authors of today and yesterday. In June 1942, two German U-boats headed quietly into American waters, aimed at two isolated beaches. On board each craft was a team of four men, eight specialists, primed for an audacious mission, codenamed Operation Pistorius. But neither team knew of another passenger with an even greater mission that could shake the world. He was the ninth man. The ninth man. A chilling story based on historical fact by John Lee and dramatized for radio in 25 episodes by Victor Max.
June 15th began on a blue note for me and heralded the start of what was to be a difficult week, a week of challenges in more ways than one. To start with, I arrived at the White House much later than my usual time with one of the biggest hangovers of all time. It had been a beautiful Sunday night, but I vowed that next time I had any bright ideas about kicking around in Gay Cogswell's kitchen, I would ask her to keep the liquor cabinet locked. My assistant, Sergeant Huffman, brought me sharply back to reality with business of the day, or rather, on this occasion, what steps to take in order to avoid an interdepartmental feud.
Can't we handle the matter through channels? I don't want to start anything with Calhoun.
It's already started. It's up to us to stop it.
Well, couldn't I write a memo? Wouldn't that be just as good as talking to him?
Like I said, Captain, it's a matter of protocol.
Oh, yeah, protocol.
Calhoun has bypassed us again. It's the third time memos have gone directly through the war room without acknowledging our existence. Mm. This goes on. Might as well not be here at all. But I suppose you could write him a memo, providing it's a tough one. Yeah, might be a good idea to put us on record. But make sure it's tough.
Yeah,
let him have both barrels. Yeah, read him the Riot Act. It's the only language he understands. Only way to survive.
Sure, sure. Corporal, wheel your typewriter over here for a moment and go get yourself a cup of tea.
Yes, sir. There you are, sir.
Thanks. I shan't be long. Oh, hell. What a start to the week. Life could be a hell of a lot simpler out there in active duty. Might be worth trying for a transfer. European theater. Even the Pacific, if they won't let me go to Europe. Anything to get away to some nice, uncomplicated carnage. Escape from this guerrilla warfare of the executive hallway. Nemo, John Bradley Calhoun, Chief White House Secret Service. From Captain Andrew Blasek, U.S. Army, White House Security Division. It would appear that our office has been inadvertently omitted from the routing list for your latest correspondence re the upcoming Hyde Park Conference. As this office is involved in security preparations, I would greatly appreciate it if you could have someone check your files for our copies. Or for duplicate copies that we might be put in the picture.
this, and it doesn't seem to be getting us anywhere. I've had enough. Anyway, I've got to go out.
But you're not going to see the...
No, don't worry. I'm not going to see the FBI. I've got to think.
Why must you go out? Why can't you think here?
Because it's hot. Because the walls are too close. Because you keep sitting there with that look on your face.
Oh, I'm just worried. Please, George, couldn't we forget about the phone call? It's not too late. You didn't give your right name.
That doesn't make any difference. It doesn't change the situation, does it?
George!
Please, Peter, let's just forget it. Just for a little while. Go buy a radio. Listen to Charlie McCarthy or Glenn Miller. Get your mind off it. You're gonna go crazy if you don't. We're getting on each other's nerves. We need to be alone for a while.
But where are you going?
Nowhere that will endanger us in the slightest, I promise you. You know that I have friends in New York. Powerful friends. Something that might help. But don't be alarmed if I'm gone for a day. Even 2 days. I promise, Peter, this will help. I've kept my promises to you, haven't I?
But Hank and Richard, if you're not back by tomorrow, what about our meeting with them?
It's not serious. You'll have to meet them by yourself.
But George...
One of us has to go. That's all there is to it. They'll get suspicious if we don't. Just see that Hank has been behaving himself. You never know what he might have been up to. You don't have to make a big issue of it. Just go to dinner with them and act like nothing has happened. Apart from the phone call, nothing has yet.
But Hank will want to know where you are, why you didn't come.
Tell him I'm meeting someone. Tell him I'm arranging transportation to recover our explosives from the beach. That ought to keep him quiet.
George,
Damn it, Peter, don't keep tearing at me. I'm doing what's right for us. Just keep them quiet. I'm doing something that'll assure our safety if we do decide to go to the FBI. We must trust each other. Don't you trust me?
Yeah, I trust you, George, but...
There are no more buts. Just do as I ask.
Just the car for you, sir. Nice little gray 39 Lincoln Zephyr Coupe. White sidewalls, radio and heater. Genuine, 30,000 miles and speedometer. Good tread on the tires. Could make a better buy.
How much is it going to cost me?
$725. Cheap at the price.
Not too bad at all.
Who shall I make the papers out to?
The name is Patterson. Raymond Patterson.
Right, Mr. Patterson. She'll last you a long time, I'm sure.
Supervised by four others in neat business suits. They're not working on a locomotive like this one for nothing. It's really something special.
What the hell do you make of this? A guy carrying pale pink roses at this time of the morning? Down on a railway siding?
Looks like he's lost his girlfriend.
Girlfriend or...
Hey, you! Where do you think you're going?
Just looking around.
Well, look around somewhere else, huh? You got no business down here on the tracks, fella. Didn't you see the signs back there?
No, sir. Guess I wasn't concentrating. I was waiting for someone special. Always been interested in locomotives. Couldn't help noticing, you know. Guess I got here a bit early. Killing time, really.
Yeah, well, kill it in the depot, kid. Stay the hell off the tracks. Those signs aren't there for nothing. It goes for you or anyone else.
Yeah, sure. No offense intended. Sorry about that. I'll get back to the passenger ramps.
I'm sure this is the train, all right. Intelligence report stated that the meeting was to convene Roosevelt's family estate in New York for the first 2 days and shift to Washington over the weekend on the special presidential train, which has to be pulled by a specially prepared engine. And this one is really special. And the number of that engine I shan't forget. It's time now to write a couple of letters and alert the two U-boat teams. When the work is done, I can dismiss them and allow them to return to their original mission. Then back to Long Island, wait for the U-boat, get out of here. By tomorrow or the day after, at the latest, they should pick up the letters and learn for the first time that they are not working strictly on their own, not on the duties to tail for them at the Cairns Lake School. Wonder how they'll react. It's bound to come as quite a surprise. Carolyn should be all right, according to his record at Upville 1. Tough, strong-minded, follows orders implicitly. Dash, on the other hand, might not be so eager. But he'll have to do what he is told. Edward J. Kelly, care of Wilhelm J. Voss. And there we are. George Dash, alias George Davis. All going well, we should be meeting at Aberdeen, Maryland by Friday or Saturday. The die is cast.
Yeah, what time is it? We've been playing for hours. I'm tired. I don't know what the hell is wrong with my pinochle.
Yeah, you either have it or you haven't. Don't worry about the time. You're so far behind now, you'll never catch up.
How far?
Yeah, about $100 worth.
Nah, I'll catch up. But I'm going to have to take a break in a few minutes. I'll have to call someone to take my shift.
I'm glad I don't have to worry about things like that anymore.
Why don't you? You're out of work or just plain independently wealthy?
Don't ask me questions I can't answer.
What do you mean you can't answer? Only ask if you got a job.
Yeah, I have a job, but I can't talk about it. If I talk, it means death.
Oh, sure, sure. And my Aunt Fanny's Greta Garbo. Who taught you to play pinochle anyway? Deal the cards. I think it's time you had some lunch. Don't you ever sleep?
Damnation. Just a pile of inconclusive teletype from New York office. 72 hours of intensive investigation, and not one solid lead to show for it? Gentlemen, do you realize how inept the FBI is made to look by this kind of incredible inefficiency? It's slipshod. That's what it is. Slipshod.
Well, it doesn't for want of trying, sir. Every investigative procedure you requested has been put into effect. We have men staked out in 4 locations near the beach, but no one's returned to the scene. Every known German national in the area has been thoroughly questioned. We've interrogated most of the townspeople.
I want progress, not excuses. I want about fingerprints on the money they gave the Coast Guard seamen.
Our experts have dusted it, sir, but found nothing of value. I'm afraid too many people handled it at the Coast Guard station before they turned it over to us.
If only people would think before they act. They obviously knew something was wrong, or we wouldn't have got it in the first place. Now, what about the bank? Have we checked the banks? They must have got the money somewhere.
Sir?
I'm convinced they had help from German aliens on the beach. The money may have come from a bank or a commercial loan office on Long Island. Send New York a telegram requesting a team to check the banks.
Yes, sir.
Another thing, if our people haven't been able to locate them by now, then they must be off the island. But how? How did they do it?
Well, you can't be sure. There were 4 tickets sold at the Mangumset station, but the station master says they were purchased by fishermen. We have some men checking it out now, working up descriptions from the station master.
Anything suspicious there? German accents, odd behavior?
Well, the station master seemed to think it was fairly normal, except that the man who bought the tickets couldn't remember the price. Seems strange. On the other hand, could happen to anybody. Sometimes one can have a mental blank and temporarily forget one's own telephone number.
We're going to take a publicity beating on this, you mark my words. The newspapers and radio commentators will flay us alive.
Oh, we placed a news embargo on the investigations. Nothing will be released to the press until you authorize it, sir.
How the hell do you keep something like this from the press? Every hysterical citizen who sees a shadow immediately calls his local newspaper to report a spy. A grocer in Cleveland calls because one of his customers buys 20 pounds of knackwurst. A woman in Kansas City reports a man who spoke German on the bus. Dallas, Chicago, Pittsburgh, you name it. The newspapers have published spy reports. Even here in Washington. Just last week, the Star got onto that matter of the special guards on the reservoir and the Washington Monument because of a sabotage scare.
Newspapers always like to print reports like that. They seldom amount to anything.
This time they may. Ordinarily, I wouldn't mind. I like an informed citizenry. Spy scares keep them alert. But this one could backfire on us. All we need is one clever newsman to notice the increased activity in the New York office, or for some of Mangan's people to start talking to newspapers about what we've been doing out in their town, and the entire roof could come crumbling down on our heads. Suddenly, the insignificant little reports from the far corners of the country would start looking more important to reporters. And we'll be reading stories about a country full of spies, scattered from ocean to ocean, just because the Bureau was too inept to catch them.
Yes, sir, I guess that's right. Those damn newspapers would blow the lid off, given half a chance.
You're damn right they would. Jenkins, I want a personal message to go to New York this afternoon over my signature. It's time someone shook them out of their lethargy.
Yes, sir.
Evans, take this down.
Sir.
Gentlemen, your recent teletype communications have been brought to my attention. I am bewildered and amazed by the lack of progress shown by your office in the matter of the German landing at Mangenset. It appears that you have thus far developed no useful information, in spite of the time and manpower which have been made available to you. You got that?
Right. Yes, sir.
I can ascribe this only to a lack of initiative on your part. I find the situation intolerable and unacceptable. Now, let me see. It saddens me, but I must today inform the White House of your lack of progress. The President will undoubtedly be as disappointed as am I. Therefore, my orders to you are to be more resourceful in the future. You must henceforth follow every lead to its logical conclusion, no matter how slight. I hold you personally responsible for any embarrassment which the Bureau may suffer as a result of your lackadaisical approach to such an extreme and urgent situation. Yours sincerely, etc., etc.
Is that all, sir?
Yes. You can send it out immediately. All right, gentlemen, I think that's all.
Sir.
You, young man.
Sir.
What is your name?
Carter, sir. Special Agent Emerson J. Carter.
Well, Special Agent Emerson J. Carter, I see sweat rings under your arms. Stop sweating. I don't like agents who sweat.
An hour later, that day, June 16th, the fourth day after the arrival of U-202, the landing of the German agents, Dash, Berger, Quirin, and Heinck, file clerks in the cavernous file room of the New York FBI office were busily sorting out and cataloging the voluminous paperwork of the last several days. Mail fraud investigations, reports on draft dodgers, detailed dossiers on people who had been proposed for security clearance, results of inquiries on suspected sabotage and malingering in war factories, correspondence, memos, schedules, depositions, activity reports. Tucked deep in the stacks of paperwork awaiting filing was a memo typed by Special Agent Fred Shea concerning his Sunday night telephone call from an informant who had identified himself as one F.D. Pastorius regarding his recent arrival in the United States from Germany. The file clerks in the office, like Special Agent Shea, had heard nothing about the spy hunt which was in progress on Long Island and in the environs of New York City. At 4:29 p.m. EDT, the Pastorius memo was placed, without ceremony, into one of the P drawers and cross-listed in a file under S for Shea. No copies were forwarded to Washington. Just before midnight, another German U-boat, the U-584. Surfaced 3 miles off the Florida coast on a calm, starlit sea and moved within landing range of Ponte Vedra, a strip of clean white beach some 7 miles south of Jackson.
Well, I wonder how our comrades have been faring. They will probably be wondering where the hell we are.
Yeah, no doubt. If that British submarine patrol hadn't spotted us 2 days out of Laurent Harbor, the captain wouldn't have had to deviate. We would have been here right on time.
No matter. They can't and won't do anything without us. We should be in contact soon. It's 11:53, and the captain says it's time to load and head for shore. Apart from the delay, everything has gone smoothly enough.
At 11:53 p.m. EDT, the four German-American civilians loaded their explosive-laden crates into an inflated rubber boat and set out for shore. The four men were...
Edvard Kerling, 32, leader of the Florida team, member of the Nazi Party since 1928, lived in America for 10 years before going back to Germany.
Bernard Thiel, 35, efficient and loyal party member, machinist, lived in Detroit for 10 years, worked with various American automobile companies.
Otto Neubauer, 32, lived for 9 years in the United States. Spent some time in Chicago, where I joined the American board. Also lived in Miami, where I met and married Anna Wolf, a German-American girl, in 1939.
Herbert Hans Haupt, 22, American citizen, no political affiliations. Lived in the United States with my parents from the age of 5. Got a girl into trouble in Chicago some time ago and left for Germany.
Kerling, Thiel, Neubauer, Haupt. The four agents. Except for being 3 days late, they landed on the Florida coast without incident.
What do you mean, Josh couldn't make it? He arranged to meet us here for dinner. I expect him to be here.
Don't get so upset, Heinrich. He had a good reason for not coming.
It had better be a good reason. He gives me the impression he's always on edge. Has he said anything to you?
No, nothing. He's spent more time in this country than any of us. Knows New York like the back of his hand. Yeah. There's nothing wrong. He said he was going to get things moving, make contact with one or two of his connections, and try to arrange for some transportation to recover our explosives from the beach.
Yeah, that's good news anyway. But I don't see why we couldn't have been let in on the secret.
Well, sometimes the less we know about things, the better. Until we're ready to strike.
It can't be too soon, as far as I'm concerned. Particularly when we are surrounded by such fat, plump targets. Just ripe for the picking.
Yeah. Well, since we're here, let's relax and enjoy ourselves a little. A couple of bottles of wine and some good food will go down well. Let's enjoy ourselves while we have the chance.
Yeah.
Right, Flynn. Describe this guy for me that you saw down on the beach.
Well, I was taken completely by surprise. All I saw was a movement, a sort of dim flicker through the fog. It was pretty heavy that night, as you know. Could have been two or three, or even four men. There seemed to be a flurry of figures, and then there was only one left standing on the beach. He just seemed to stand there and wait for me. When I got close enough to run my flashlight over his face, I saw he wasn't a young guy. Somewhat older, maybe between 35 and 40 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
He had a long, horsey sort of face and penetrating eyes. His hair was wet, as though it just come out of the water, but it seemed to me as though it was sandy-coloured, streaked with grey and swept right back from his forehead, which was rather wide. Hell, I was unarmed and wasn't sure who the hell he was or what. He could quite easily have pulled a gun and blown me head off. I felt all I could do was try and play along and bluff my way out.
That was Episode 7 of The Ninth Man by John Lee, adapted and directed for broadcasting in 25 parts by Victor Magazine. You have been listening to Best Sellers, featuring the masterworks of famous authors that have captured the imagination of the world.